Horn Nation.
He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Texas is back. The kicker comes through.
We're back. Welcome back to another episode of the Fire Tom Herman Podcast, your overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. My name is Josh, and I am here with Noah again, and we're back with an episode that we actually planned out this time. So, Noah, we've had some time since we ranted and raved our way through the post-game exhaustion and the instant reaction episode on Saturday. We've had some time to look back through the tape. And you actually took advantage of that time to look back through the tape. I did not. I'm too lazy. But what did you see on the tape that you didn't notice at the time that, I guess, maybe was better, maybe was worse?
Well, there's a lot that I didn't notice at first. Because, to be honest, I just watched the game as a fan, which sometimes, sometimes you might come out worse for wear, I feel like, watching the game as a fan rather than an analyst. Like whenever your team is down 15 with 3 minutes to go against an underdog, semi-rival. But yeah, I definitely enjoy just kind of getting in on the hype and everything. And of course, that means that there's a lot that in our post-game reaction episode I said, but may not have actually been the tail of the tape. So it's always good to have a little bit of time to cool down, go back and rewatch and see where the team's really at.
Yeah, so some of those bright spots, I guess if you're Tom Herman, he said in his weekly press conference that he went back and watched the tape and he thought the offensive line played a lot better on tape than they did. Than he thought they did on the field, which I think means that he had a pretty low standard, because from looking back through it while I was doing the editing to get everything up on the Longhorn Nation game archive on YouTube there, I can't say I was particularly blown away by how well the offensive line played in retrospect. So I can only imagine that Herman's opinion of the offensive line was pretty damn negative walking onto the bus.
It had to have been, because I certainly did not come away with a better opinion of the offensive line after a rewatch. I really thought that the O-line was one of the reasons we were in the hole that we were in, and not just for run blocking issues and miscommunication issues, but in that third quarter when we went cold, a lot of it was because of just really bad offensive penalties, mainly by the offensive line. It reminded me a lot of the 2018 Oklahoma game where we kind of get a lead and then we go really cold because we keep shooting ourselves in the foot with penalties and dropped passes, and then suddenly we're needing a really clutch drive at the end or a clutch dicker play to bring it back. But bright spots that I did think that I saw on the tape were Keontae Ingram was the first one I wanted to bring up. His touches were kind of limited, which I think that's the expectation for this season now that we have three talented backs. But I think so far this season he's off to a really good start in terms of low touches but high impact.
Yeah, I think the plan is definitely for this season for us to sort of do the running back by committee thing. And I think his touches picked up a little bit simply because of Bijan's scary incident. But yeah, Keontae Ingram, I think, really carried the offense, much to the chagrin of a lot of us who were getting very frustrated with the number of run plays that we were calling in positions where we wanted to get some variety and start throwing the ball a little bit more. But despite that, I think he had like 89 yards on 12 carries. So he was putting up like 7 yards per carry. He was doing a pretty good job, despite, as we just talked about, the offensive line having so many issues, making holes, pass blocking. Keontae Ingram really wasn't deterred by the offensive line's inability to perform.
Yep. Next bright spot, I think that you got to give it to Cameron Dicker. There's no way around his getting, you have to appreciate his impact on the game between the field goal and what was just a really good offsides kick, or onsides kick, sorry, to make a really difficult catch for the defender, and then also high enough so that instead of being low and at the guy's feet, it bounced up into the air for Malcolm Epps to snag.
Yeah, and I talked about it. It's one of the instant reactions that I'm going to stand by. Cameron Dicker is an elite onside kicker. Should be at least 3 successful onside kicks now. Other than Colin Johnson's 2 issues last year, should have been 3 recoveries on 3 attempts. But he does an excellent job making it difficult for the returning or the return team, the hands team for the other side, to get a good grasp on it. Really good bounce. He's really consistent. The guys always know exactly where the ball is going to be, and the ball is there every single time. It's just a matter of being able to hold on to it. So Cameron Dicker, anytime we need an offensive or an onside kick, which hopefully will not be any more times this year because it is too damn stressful to have to deal with that. I feel more certain that we can convert on that than I have with any other kicker, professional or college. The dude is just clutch.
I think his career percentage at this point is only like 75%, but every time that you trot him out in a big situation where the game's on the line, you know he's going to come through. And frankly, that's all you want from a kicker, right? Like that's the single most important part of a kicker's game. So yeah, glad to have that dude on our side. And I think that the last bright spot that I really wanted to mention, because frankly there weren't that many of them, would be the run defense. It's tough to call it a bright spot when they gave up the icing 75-yard touchdown run with 3 minutes left. But outside of that, they did a really good job. Their average, so I went back and I charted every Texas Tech run play and I noted down where was the first time that they were contacted or where a defender had a legitimate opportunity to actually make the tackle. And so their average yards before contact was only 0.5 for the game. If you're only allowing a half yard before making contact, you're doing something really right. That means that your defensive line is getting disruption while also not sacrificing gap integrity. It means their linebackers know that where their assignments are and are able to close down quickly onto running backs. And I thought that all of that was true. It's just the tackling was so bad that it kind of didn't matter where you touch them if you can't get them to the ground.
Yeah, because even on that 75-yard touchdown run, that wasn't one where Sir Roderick Thompson suddenly found space. At a very early point in the run, he had four Texas players with hands on him. As we had done all game, he was constantly getting swallowed up. I mean, outside of that 75-yard touchdown run, Texas Tech's offense could only manage less than 2 yards per carry. So we were clogging those lanes. We were getting guys to swarm to the ball. And outside of that big touchdown run, we were doing a really good job of bringing him down or bringing down the running back when we made contact. All of our issues tackling really seemed to come through on that one play, that 175-yard touchdown run, and then otherwise back in the secondary in the pass game.
I think that part kind of an area that it's, you know, it's a hybrid run, run game and pass game are those swing passes. Cause I know that we missed several tackles on those swing passes. And I mean, that's why you run screens and swings is you're getting your guy, your running back, your slot receiver, one-on-one with a defensive back coming downhill. So it's up to the DB to make the play. And a lot of times we just didn't. And I think that we've now transitioned into the not so bright spots portion of the podcast, but there's just no way around talking about the missed tackles and just how many of them there were. I had been really high on Overshown last week. I may have said that I thought that he was going to be better than Malik this year. You know, don't check the tape, but it's possible that I might have said something like that. And he had a really rough game. I think he missed like 4 or 5 tackles. And it looks like last year where he has the range and the athleticism to get to the ball carrier, but he just can't actually finish the play. And it's meaningless to be there if you're not going to be able to make the tackle.
Yeah, and hopefully that does end up being something that is mostly a product of missing out on spring practice, pretty limited fall practice, where he made this position change from trying to be a safety to trying to be a weak side linebacker now with a pretty limited ability to actually execute on the practice field before going into real game action. So hopefully this is a growth thing and not sort of a standard that we should expect from Overshown. I think he's shown that he has that athleticism. So it's really just about getting wrangled in, and hopefully there's something that'll get better as he gets more and more reps, that he'll be able to have a more positive impact on the game rather than seemingly always being the guy getting victimized in every play and missing tackles and being in the wrong spots.
Well, can I hit you with the real pessimist's take here for a second, Josh? Because I try not to be too...
That's what we're all about. You got to be a little bit overreactionary, and if you can't be pessimistic, then what are we doing?
The pessimist take is that some of the worst offenders in terms of tackling in this game were Overshown and B.J. Foster. Foster and Overshown both kind of have a history of being poor fundamental tacklers. You know, Foster tends to really throw himself at the ball carrier and not wrap up, and Overshown just seems to be put on skates a lot. And then the other issue that I saw was Caden Stearns took a couple bad angles, and that's something that he struggled with since freshman year, and that you hope he would improve on, and you'd hope that Foster would improve on his fundamentals, and you would hope that Overshown would improve on, I don't know if it's a mental issue where he just freaks out whenever he gets to the ball carrier, but these are all things that we've now seen since their freshman year and that we've expected improvement. And, you know, last year we kind of wrote it off as, oh, well, they're thinking too much. Todd Orlando's got him out of position. They're just trying to figure out where they're supposed to be. They can't make the plays that they're able to. And I agree with all those things. But at a certain point, missed tackling, whenever it's been going on for so long, it's just missed tackles. And I think that you have to count on that happening. So that's kind of where I'm at with the missed tackles on the defense, to be totally frank, is just I think that we're going to be a poor tackling team until they actually prove that we're not. And you already mentioned the reasons, you know, the uphill battles that they've had to climb. And I think that all those are valid. But I also still think that at the end of the day, we just are going to miss 10 to 15 tackles a game.
And I hope that's not true, even though last episode, or the last real episode, not our instant reaction one, one of my hot takes was sort of jokingly fire Chris Ash because we didn't get a shutout against UTEP, who, for the record, is quietly 3-1 on the year after a dominating win over Louisiana Monroe last week. So, yeah, I hope that you're wrong. I don't have a lot of legitimate reasons to believe that you're wrong, but I'm still going to blindly hope that you're wrong, and that will feed into one of my hot takes that I'm going to have in this episode. Another area where we struggled was timely or not timely penalties. A lot of procedural issues. I'm pretty sure, again, everyone on the offensive line had some sort of penalty, whether it was holding or a false start, or illegal man downfield, whatever. Every single player, including Sam Cosmi, had a negative impact in that regard. So that's another thing we need to get cleaned up. I know Tom Herman said during his press conference that from talking to the Big 12 conference, they said there were probably 3 or 4 penalties that shouldn't have been called. But even still, if you're having those procedural penalties, those offensive line penalties, those hurt a ton, hurt the offense a ton, especially in a game where we're already struggling to sort of find our rhythm. Those penalties just make everything worse. That's something that we need to cut down on. And I feel like we're sort of a broken record at this point. Seems like every single season we've said that about Tom Herman's Texas teams, is they commit too many penalties, shoot themselves in the foot too much, and we need to cut back.
Yeah,
on that.
And it's absolutely true. There's a reason that we say it so much. So, I mean, into the half, Texas, we had 31 points. And then in the second half, we picked up, I guess, one touchdown right off the blocked punt. So this is all prior to the comeback. This is the point I'm trying to get to. But prior to our comeback in the second half, these were our offensive drives. 3 and out, where Cade Brewer dropped the ball on third down. A punt where we had a holding on first down to give us first and 21, and then the failed trick play on second down. Sam's interception on the third drive. Fourth was a field goal after a drive stalled out inside the 10. Fifth was a blocked punt after a holding penalty on first down. 3 and out after a chop block for our next drive. And then that was the last drive before the comeback. So what I'm trying to get to with all that info, because I feel like I just vomited a bunch of words out onto my microphone, is that four of the six drives that we had in the second half before our comeback were killed by either a dropped pass or offensive line penalties. So I absolutely think that you're right in saying that we just had really untimely penalties committed by all members of the offensive line. And in the second half, it kind of became just a recurrent theme where the offensive line put us in the hole, and then Sam had to try to dig us out of it. And he just wasn't able to often because he had, you know, 3rd and 21, 3rd and 15. So it's unsurprising that you end up giving this big run to Texas Tech if you're not able to move the ball at all because you keep shooting yourself in the foot.
Definitely. The last sort of bright spot we want to talk about, conveniently, we got a voicemail today for this episode, a hot take, and we will listen to that right now, but it covers some sort of conversation with the special teams there. So let's take a listen.
Yo, guys. Love listening to your podcast. It is currently Sunday, September 27th, about 12:30 Mountain Time. This is Brian, ex-4-year member of the Longhorn Drumline, living in Colorado now, but holy shitballs. Oh, my heart is still recovering from yesterday's game, but I wanted to share a hot take about the defense. I think the one positive thing I can kind of think of to take away from those guys is 21 of the points scored by Texas Tech, I'm kind of going to put on the offense and special teams. If Ellinger doesn't throw that interception at the end of the third quarter, which was just, that was a gut punch. If Jamison doesn't drop that punt, the punt return, if we don't get that punt blocked, man, that's 21 points that I'm blaming on the offense and special teams.
All right. Thank you, Brian from Colorado, for the call. He was our voicemail this week. Appreciate you calling in, giving your thoughts. We love having the community get more involved with this. Just a reminder, everyone who's listening, if you want to call in to the Fire Tom Herman podcast hot take line, you can hit us up at 512-677-4578. Obviously, we know you're going to be more fired up during games where we play bad like we did against Texas Tech, but we love to hear from you guys, want to be able to involve you guys in some way in every episode. But Brian talked about it. For all the issues that the defense had, there were a lot of points, or there were several points that were gifted to Texas Tech and put the defense in a bad spot because of problems with the special teams, as well as the turnover from Sam.
Right. And I think Brian kind of nailed it there. The defense was bad. We don't want to say the defense wasn't bad, but they certainly weren't as poor as 56 points would imply. They even at times made really good plays to cover up for the mistakes of our offense and special teams. They had interceptions on the play after the onside kick and the play after the blocked punt. So you can't really ask for more than a big special teams error followed literally one play later by an interception. So they definitely had some good spots, I think, but overall it was still worse than we would have hoped for. But yeah, there probably was a bit of overreaction, just given how tense the game ended up being.
Yeah, but yeah, Brian's absolutely right. You take away some of those mistakes from the special teams, especially that muffed punt, where you're talking about a 10 to 14 point swing right there. We end up avoiding overtime. We're talking about how poorly we played, but not having to rely on this massive, highly unlikely comeback in order to get the dub. So, yeah, I mean, basically, if your name is not Cameron Dicker or Tyler Owens, there's a lot for you to work on in special teams drills this week before TCU.
And, you know, since we have Hutzler and I think Hagen's the other, no, Bulware. Hutzler and Bulware both have special teams coaching experience, so theoretically we should be able to get those ironed out.
Yeah, I hope so, especially because there are parts of these special teams or special forces, as Tom Herman likes to call them, which is not a great look after this bad of a game to clean up. Because, yeah, when you've got Cameron Dicker playing as well as he does, some of our returns when Jamison actually catches them have looked pretty dangerous. So there are positives in our special teams. We just need to sort of get these apparently glaring holes that Texas Tech found and exploited, get those taken care of, and that will help the defense a lot, and it'll hopefully help the offense be able to find a rhythm, not get sort of jebaited into thinking they're going into the game and then they're not, and then the defense bails it out and they are. So if we can get everything to play sort of complementary football, have the special teams supporting the defense, supporting the offense.
Mm-hmm. Big if for sure. But let's go ahead and wrap up our conversation on the Texas Tech game and look back at some of our hot takes from last week. So I guess I'll start off with mine. Mine was that Sam would throw touchdowns to four different receivers and Tariq Black would have 2 touchdowns. I guess I got the number of touchdown passes right, but Tariq Black was kind of absent from the game plan. Not sure quite what happened there. Seems like Brendan Eagles has kind of fought back and earned his spot back. And then, of course, aside from him, it was kind of the Josh Moore show. So I was definitely a bit off there with in terms of the distribution of impact from the wide receiver group.
Yeah, Tariq Black. I don't think Tariq Black even registered a catch, which was definitely disappointing. I had him on RCFB in reverse sheep. I had picked Tariq Black to get 100 yards receiving and a touchdown. So swing and a miss on that one. My hot take or prediction or whatever you want to call it was Sam was going to break his personal record that he had set against UTEP for passing yards in a game. Ended up nowhere close to that because for one reason or another, the passing game was not the huge emphasis of our game plan, which was a little confusing, but, you know, I guess worse things have happened. And then we talked about it already. I trusted Chris Ash a bit too much with my score prediction. My score prediction had been 49-17 Texas. Even though I had called for his firing after UTEP, it was definitely tongue-in-cheek. So I was expecting the team to bounce back, hold Tech to 17, and obviously they did not do that at all.
My score prediction was kind of a meme, but kind of not. It was 66-3. I was really more thinking like 54-27 or something. I thought that our offense would, like you said, kind of attack vertically and do more with the passing game. Not exactly sure what the game plan was. It's one of those things where, like, on rewatch, it wasn't as bad as I thought live, but still there are things I would have done differently. But yeah, the defense was certainly a lot worse than I expected it to be, giving up 56. But anyways, I guess we can kind of move on from Tech. If you'd like to go ahead and...
We can kind of talk about our hot takes for sort of in reaction to this. I think my hot take is I'm going to continue to be blind and stupid here and wanting to keep faith in Chris Ash turning this thing around. But my hot take, this game is going to prove to be an aberration by year's end. We're not going to struggle like this defensively. The missed tackles, despite what you've said, I'm thinking missed tackles, we make some corrections this week. Hopefully we'll really need to have made these corrections for Texas Tech. So I'm hoping a lot of these holes get patched up. This is sort of the Maryland game for the defense, and we get to be more like the team we saw against UTEP than the team we saw against Texas Tech.
I think you're probably right. My hot take is a little bit different, and I feel bad because I'm just being so negative this episode, and that wasn't really the plan because I'm still pretty high on our team. You know, I still think we're the favorites for the conference. But my hot take is that this game proves that all the hype over the offseason for the four-man front was overrated. I think that they're different. They have different strengths and weaknesses. But in no way do I think that the four-man front was a fix-all cure for our issues on defense. And in fact, if we're not able to generate a consistent pass rush, it might just exacerbate them. Because the three-man front, you can drop 8. But if you're still not getting any more pressure with 4 guys than with 3, then you only have 7 in the secondary. And, I mean, that's just worse numbers. So hopefully we can find a little bit more of a consistent pass rush. Osai did flash a couple times against Tech. But unless we're able to, we're still going to have a lot of issues. And I think that any sort of fixes for this defense and improvements are going to come from just better fundamental teaching rather than this new front that we're running.
Definitely. So let's sort of wash our hands of Texas Tech. Let's hope we never have to speak about what happened in Lubbock again, outside of just sort of remember when we had that wild comeback against Texas Tech.
Yeah, well, in 2 years, there's going to be some new BS that happened in Lubbock that we're going to talk about.
All of the bullshit always goes down in Lubbock. It's one of those places, Lubbock or Ames or Stillwater, where weird, stupid shit happens, and you just hope that you're not on the negative side of it. But yeah, let's sort of talk a little bit about TCU. That's obviously our next opponent. We're not going to go super in depth because that takes a lot more prep work than we're willing to put in for a free podcast by people who are definitely not experts, nor are we trying to be insiders or 995ers or pretend to have some higher understanding of the game, because the whole point is that we're just fans like you guys. But TCU up next. This was our worst game, I think, last year. Sam had an absolute meltdown. I think he had 4 interceptions last year. But I think the biggest difference is that last year we were in Fort Worth. This year we get to be back home in Austin, Texas. So hopefully that results in a different outcome for the team.
Yeah, I certainly do hope so, because I have been foolish enough to attend both of the last two games in Fort Worth. Both of them were really miserable experiences. And it's a TCU team that I think is better than I would have given them credit for coming into the game. And that's just a little bit scary whenever you're talking about a Gary Patterson team.
Yeah, because the expectation for Gary Patterson is always going to be that stout defense. And I think every single year the question is the same for them, is whether or not their quarterback situation is going to allow them to be dangerous offensively. Going into their game last week against Iowa State, TCU's first game due to COVID delays and everything else. They started a walk-on because their usual starter, Max Duggan, was hurt. Duggan ends up coming in at halftime down in a hole because Iowa State was able to sort of take advantage of those issues that the walk-on was having. And he threw for like 250 yards in the second half alone. So it seems like Max Duggan's back. He will almost certainly be starting against us because he was healthy enough to play against Iowa State, who should theoretically have also been one of the other strong defenses in the conference. But I guess I'm a little nervous. I've seen some Texas fans claim they think that Max Duggan is better than Alan Bowman. And if that's the case, we had enough issues with Alan Bowman. I guess I would say I'm definitely nervous about having to face Max Duggan.
I think that's warranted. I would probably put Duggan in the same, I don't know, tier list blob in kind of the middle of the Big 12 with Alan Bowman and Brock Purdy, where it's like these guys aren't elite, but they're good enough to light you up if you let them, you know? And so he did look really good second half last week. You know, maybe by the end of the season we'll all consider him to be elite. I don't know. And I was looking at some of their other stats and was like, you know, there's nobody really on the outside that scares me as a receiver. And then I realized, well, Max Duggan only played a half. So of course their receivers might not look so good. But I definitely think there's truth to what you're talking about. With the question about TCU is always, do they have a quarterback? And since they do, you expect our offense to be slowed down a little bit by Patterson. There was a press conference where Herman kind of talked about some of the frustrations of going up against a Gary Patterson defense. And I don't think that you can ever expect to put up more than 40 on TCU. Even in 2018, I think we put up 31. And Herman's response was, well, I wasn't frustrated because we put up 31. I'm like, well, you know, buddy, that's not actually all that many points. Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to say other than that. I think that this is going to be something where you're going to have to see guys on both sides of the ball for Texas step up, because you're not going to be able to win with offense alone because their defense is good, and you're not going to be able to win with defense alone because I don't think our defense is going to win us any games this year. So what you're hoping to do is have a relatively consistent offensive performance, put up enough points on the board, and just have the defense make plays, get some vital stops, get themselves off the field, play well on third downs.
Yeah, you mentioned there's not a ton of terrifying weapons on the outside. So yeah, I think it's just the defense needs to make some key stops. The offense needs to just be efficient and effective, not have these dead three and out drives if you're not going to score or if you're not going to get in the end zone. You got to get something out of it. Give the defense a chance to breathe, whatever. Yeah, because it's just so early on with only one game that TCU lost to Iowa State in the end. With really only one game, TCU's got a lot of question marks. And we talked about coming into this game this game against Texas Tech, was that game one to game two is where you see sort of the biggest jump. You get a better picture of what the team actually looks like in game two. We haven't seen game two from TCU. We are game two for TCU. So, going to learn a lot about TCU and hopefully learn a lot about them on our way to still winning the game.
That's a good point. Because, I mean, who knows how these teams in the Big 12 actually are. We saw Kansas State lose to Arkansas State, right? And then come out and beat OU. And Iowa State lost their first game, so everybody was down on them. And then TCU barely managed to squeak by them. So, really, we have no idea, I don't think, about the relative strength of these teams. So, the goal, as it always should be, is just go 1-0 every day, play your best game, go 1-0 on the day of. So, yeah, that's kind of it for me on TCU.
All right, well, with that, let's just dive into the predictions. I guess my sort of spicy prediction is that we do recover a lot as far as our tackling is concerned. We improve significantly compared to how we did against Texas Tech. And in this game, we will have single-digit missed tackles. I put 8 total missed tackles. We'll have fewer than 8 missed tackles for the Texas defense all game. If we can do that, I think that changes things dramatically. I think Rod Babers posted a stat on Twitter that something like nearly 30% of Texas Tech's yards came after a missed tackle. So if you can just bring guys down where they're supposed to be, those gaps that are available, the quick passing game that seemed to be eating us alive, that shuts down a lot of that. The dink and dunk football doesn't hurt you as bad if you can just play fundamental football. That's what TCU has done to everyone. That's basically Patterson's calling card, is to play that really strong, really fundamental football and not give guys second chances. I think that's the sort of defense that I'm going to expect out of Texas in this game. And for that reason, I'm going to say Texas 38, TCU 21 final score.
Final score-wise, that's actually kind of close to what I've got. I've just got a little bit closer, I suppose. But I went with the 38 for Texas as well. And then I'm giving TCU 31. Because I just think that the not quite as high on the defensive bounce back as you are there. And then my spicy prediction is, you know, it is a Gary Patterson team. I think that he'll get Sam a couple times. Maybe we see a fumble or two. But I think that Texas turns the ball over 3 times on the game. And but we also kind of respond and are able to pick up 2 interceptions of our own.
I mean, that wouldn't be the worst thing. If we're able to force turnovers, it's... It'll make everything a lot easier to put up with. And that was one of the things that we did do well against Tech, was we did force some turnovers. So hopefully that's something that continues. If you're going to sort of settle into this sort of bend, don't break area, then forcing turnovers becomes imperative to be able to execute at a high enough level defensively to still be successful.
Right. It certainly lowers the bar in terms of just consistent play. You can give up more yards. You can give up some conversions. Turnovers are kind of the great equalizer there.
Yeah, so I think we both agree really what we're looking for in this game is just more consistency. Consistency from the defense, consistency in making tackles in space, continuing to be strong against the run as we were against Texas Tech, because Max Duggan, even though this is his second year, he is still generally unproven. He had a big game against us last year, but I think as usual, with a guy who's that still pretty green, you want to make him have to beat you with his arm. So if we can shut down the run, make him sort of need to take over the game and hopefully continue to make those tackles in space, or actually start making those tackles in space, that'll help a lot. And then, yeah, the offensive game plan, just I think we know that we have one of the best quarterbacks in college football in Sam Ellinger. I think Yurcich needs to find a way to get him into a rhythm faster. I think that was part of the thing that hurt us this past week, was we weren't giving him anything sort of easy. It seemed like we're either going deep or doing all these RPOs that Tech was sort of forcing into running plays. Just give him something easy, get him rolling, and slowly sort of build out that route tree that you're asking of the receivers and asking Sam to hit. Even though TCU's got good safeties and everything, I think just get Sam into a place where he can be consistent, and I think that opens up the whole offense for you.
Right. I really want to see more stuff in the short to intermediate game over the middle of the field. We saw a lot of screens, saw some out routes, and we actually saw a pretty good amount of 4 verts. On rewatch, that was one thing I noticed, is it was more than I thought it was going to be. But, you know, like, we ran a pretty good amount of mesh against UTEP. I'd like to see more of that, because that beats man-to-man, like, really... really easily. And then also some more stuff over the middle. Like, Tech tore us up. They tore up our linebackers just by hitting slants and in routes from that, you know, 6 to 12 yard range. So I would love to see us get more of that, because that's an easy way to get your ball in space and to eat up a zone if TCU is going to run that. And then if they run man, you hit them with mesh. So it's kind of one of those things where I would like to see like 5 or so less of the QB draw play. I don't know why that was back in the playbook this last week. We didn't really run against UTEP. But, you know, take those plays out, throw in some more of those easy passes for Sam over the middle. Plus, that plays into the whole tempo thing, because, you know, the ball's right there in the middle of the field. You don't have to really reset. Everybody just gets on the new line. You're able to keep going. So certainly agree with you there. The game plan wasn't too bad, I didn't think, after rewatch this past week, but I definitely think that there are ways that it could be improved on, and a lot of it are just those spread concepts that we were hoping that Yurcich would bring more of.
Well, that'll do it for us on this episode. Thanks for sticking with us as we continue to sort of live through what happened this past weekend in Lubbock. But be sure to follow us on Twitter at the FTH Podcast. We've been doing live tweeting, considering we're not really going to football games this year. I'm stuck at home. So in-game tweeting, shitty memes and Cruton graphics throughout the week as stuff comes and goes. Those Cruton graphics done by yours truly, as we continue to explore my graphic design is my passion phase of my life. Also a reminder to hit us up on the hot take line at 512-677-4578. You can leave us a voicemail or you can send us text messages for an opportunity to be featured on our weekly episode, like we had from Brian from Colorado on this episode, which we thank him again for calling in on that. But until next week, hook 'em.